So here, my name is Todd Krieger, and I am a marriage therapist, marriage and sex therapist. I've been doing this for 28 years, and I'm very excited about this teleseminar. This is great technology. This is the first time I'm using this technology. I've done teleseminars before, but this is going to be, I think, a definite step up. And the name of this teleseminar is called Great Communication, Great Sex, The Link Between Emotional and Physical Intimacy. And so I was thinking about what would I want to do for this teleseminar, this free teleseminar, what would I want to talk about? And I spend my time with people day in and day out in my office, as well as on Skype these days and on the phone, helping couples communicate clearly and connect. And this is something that is really challenging because we don't have the role models. None of us grew up with parents, grandparents, ancestors that have taught us how to communicate in ways that make us both feel heard. So there's also a problem in society in terms of this idea that as people go along in marriage, their passion dies, that sexuality pretty much ends. I joke around and I say when I wrote my book, The Long Hot Marriage, but my brother, when he heard the title, he says, oh, is it a fairy tale? And this kind of thinking is paramount. I mean, this is a cultural phenomenon. We all go around, many of us go around, joking about how marriage means the end of all sexuality. It's not true. And I could tell you I've seen countless number of couples that have proven that that is not true. So what's the missing link? I find that the missing link is we have to develop emotional intimacy, which means connection, which means developing great communication. And great communication is necessary to be a precursor to great sex. So I'm going to go through some of these slides. This is a slide I put together specifically for this talk. And I wanted to tell you that if you have questions and you're on the call, feel free to I haven't muted anybody out, but if you want to just listen, that's fine too. I know this isn't an easy subject to volunteer with. So I'm going to talk, and if anybody wants to ask, feel free. I am learning about this. If there's a way to for me to help people through the webcast ask questions, I will, but I can't promise anything because I'm still learning this technology. So I will definitely do my best. But the main thing is I just want to get this information out to you, and I want you to enjoy the talk. Okay, so men's needs, women's needs. Now, we are very similar. We're very similar. I mean, sure, we're different, but we're very similar. We're also very different. How are we similar? Well, both the man and the woman need to get their important emotional needs met. Both, right? Both have feelings. I mean, I have sadness and anger and fear and joy, and just like my wife, we both have feelings. We both need to feel validated. We both need to feel loved. So there's a lot of similarities there. There's a lot of similarities. Now, I'm going to go through some differences, but even the differences, it's not that black and white. And there's some similarities there as well. And when we're talking about human behavior, on some level we have to simplify it a little bit to understand it. So typically we'll say, oh, the women are the emotional ones, the men are the logical ones. And that's true most of the time. It's not true all of the time. So we have to realize there's always differences, and there's always things that we have to realize that are not exactly black and white. But again, we're similar. And it's important that we both get our needs met, so we have to find out what those emotional needs are. The problem is that we do go around oftentimes in our own world, in our own egocentric world, and we don't really acknowledge that the other person is valid for being different. So let's take a look at how we're different. Okay, well, women, they tend to live more in their feelings, like I just said. They tend to live more in their feelings. What does that mean? It means that they're more in their bodies. They're more tuned in to what's going on in their bodies, their emotions, their sensations, their energy. It's it's more accessible to them as a general rule. Why is that? I think there are physiological reasons why that is, and probably there are definitely some social learning reasons why there is. Physiologically, probably it was important for women back in the old days, caveman days even, to connect. They were the gatherers, right? They gathered and the men hunted. So for men, feelings weren't all that crucial to go hunt. So I think there's some built-in evolutionary differences why women are more in tune with their feelings as a general rule and more than their partners, their male partners. Now let's go on to the second bullet there. That women need to feel the movement of feelings between her and her partner to feel alive. This is very crucial. This is very crucial that men sometimes don't get. They need to feel the movement of feelings. What does that mean? It means literally that she needs to be able to express what she's experiencing in her body, her feelings and her sensations, to her male partner. Her male partner takes it in and receives it, and it immediately makes her feel more alive. I'm sure we'll be talking about this as I continue this teleseminar. That's a truism. She needs to feel the movement of feelings between her. And the other part of it is that he expresses who he is, which is the authentic male person, which is the next bullet. He needs to be expressed something significant and important about him to her. And that is what makes her feel alive. The more she experiences this connecting, the more alive she feels. The more alive she feels. Now, I'm not saying that it doesn't make men feel more alive. I think it does. But we're not oftentimes even in touch with that need. Where women, it's easy to see, when they're with their female friends and they're connecting that way, they're alive. When they're with their husband and they're connecting that way, they're alive. If they don't get that, they start to deaden somewhat. They start to numb out. And since, again, we haven't had the role models, how many of us have seen one father, the mother say to the father, "I'm really angry at you," and the father leans forward and says, "Really, honey? Tell me more about that." You know, how many of us have heard that? I say that analogy a lot. We haven't heard it, so why would we do it? Not automatically. We're not going to do that automatically. What do we automatically do? If I'm the husband and my wife is saying, "I'm really angry at you," what do? I try to block it in some way or deflect it, or I defend myself or tell her to stop being so emotional. The problem with that is she's not experiencing that movement of feelings. So she's feeling a little less alive than she did before. The less alive she feels, you can see I'm making a case here. The less alive she feels, the less attracted she might be to me, the less she'll want to have sex with me. I mean, that's just the logical common sense. Okay? So what she needs is his emotional attention and presence. That is what she needs. What do I mean by that? Well, I think as men, we tend to think that we, you know, what we need to do is provide income. That's important. Women, too, provide income. It's not as simple as it was back in the 1950s. But men are still grown up with the idea that, you know, women need us to provide. They need us to protect. They need us to do chores around the house, tasks around the house. That's not something I do tasks around the house. I'm not the handiest of guys, but if a guy's handy, that's a big bonus. That's all true. That's all very true. However, what she really needs more than anything else to feel alive, what's going to have the most impact with most women I've seen, is that she needs to feel his emotional attention and presence. So that when she's expressing anything that she feels, that he puts his eyes on her, he puts his heart with her, in other words, he's focused on her, and everything else recedes to the background. And there's a presence about him. There's a presence. I remember having a couple of years ago that I saw, and his wife complained about the relationship. She wasn't fulfilled, and he says, I don't understand what she wants from me. You know, I go to work, I work hard, I come home, I don't cheat on her, I don't drink too much, you know, what does she want? And he was a CPA, and I said to him, do you remember the last client you saw? He goes, yeah, it was just a few hours ago. I said, do you remember them sitting there, like behind, you're behind your desk there in front of it, do you remember how you were focused on them? He goes, oh, yeah, I was very focused on them and what they were saying, and I was also really focused on the documents that I had, that were their documents. And I said, okay, and did you just focus on the documents the whole time? He goes, no, I would shift from focusing on the documents to focusing on them. But I said, well, did the couple, would they have believed at any moment while they were with you that you really weren't focused on either them or the document? And he said, no, I don't think they'd want to ever come back as clients. So I said, now you go home, before you came to this session, you went home and you saw your wife. Notice the quality of your attention and your focus and your presence with her compared to what you had with your clients and your clients' documents. And he bust out laughing. He said, I get it. Now, obviously, I am not saying that as men we need to be fully focused on women and giving that attention all the time. I mean, we need a break, and we're not going to do that. We'll talk about that. But there has to be some consistency there of emotional attention and presence. Another thing, she needs to feel cherished. Do men need to feel cherished? Probably, but I think there are other things that are even more important to them. She needs to feel cherished. What do I mean by cherished? She needs to feel like she is the most important person in your life, at least a lot of the time. She needs to feel that she matters. She needs to feel that she's a significant person in your life. And the last thing is, sexually, I say she is more like a crock pot. What I mean by that, for most women, again, I'm qualifying that, we're all different, and different times for different women, they may not feel like a crock pot. But the crock pot generally, you know, I mean, a crock pot is something where you cook things slowly, they heat up slowly, and then there's a great result if you wait long enough. If you stop the cooking too quickly, the food isn't going to be right. So it takes some time to warm up, to heat up, to cook, and then you have this great, great dinner. So sexually, she's more like a crock pot. She needs attention. Emotional attention is the best kind of foreplay. I mean, really, everything you can think of that has to do with intimacy is about foreplay. The way you look at each other, the way you text each other. Okay, but she needs to warm up, and a lot of men go around not realizing this. So they go around, they're working, they go home, they want their wives to be sexual, and they're not sexual, and then they're frustrated with it. Well, there hasn't been any warm-up time. She's a crockpot. All right, so, men. Well, what I have noticed in my practice is that one primary need for a man with his women is he needs to feel adequate. He needs to feel like he's good enough. And of course, in the negative, I mean, the less the woman feels cherished, the less the woman feels significant, the less the woman feels his emotional presence, probably she's going to act in ways that are going to bring out his feeling of inadequacy. Likewise, because it's really a dance that men and women do, it's not her fault or his fault, it's just a dance. Now, likewise, the more he feels inadequate, the more he might pull back and disconnect and not give her what she needs, and this could be a negative spiral. On the other extreme, or the other direction, I should say, if she acts in ways that make him feel good enough, adequate, if she speaks to him with this in mind, that he does need to feel adequate, and she doesn't become overly harsh, overly critical, there are ways for her to express her needs and keep in mind his need to feel adequate. And that will bring him closer to her so he doesn't have to climb such a steep mountain to develop those emotional skills of being emotionally present. It's hard enough for us men. Women need to help us out. So he needs to feel adequate. He wants to make a positive impact. Our husbands, I'm speaking from the women now, I could kind of go back and forth. Our husbands want to feel like they're making a positive impact with us wives. So we got to keep that in mind. And when the husband feels like he's not making a positive impact, he may start to feel inadequate. And if it becomes more of a global feeling, he might pull away. So we need to understand that's very important, that he wants to make a positive impact. Now, what else? How are we different? He wants to solve problems, and he lives more in his mind. That's kind of those two things come together. He wants to solve problems, he lives more in his mind, and that's true. A lot of us men spend most of our time, you know, thinking and being rational, and if there's an emotional issue, how do we solve the problem to make it better? That's not always what's needed, though. But that's where we're different. That's where we tend to go automatically, as a general rule. And sexually, he's more like a microwave. Again, this is not always the case, but sexually, he can be having a terrible day at work, and he sees his wife, and his wife says, come here, I have something for you, and has a lingerie, some negligee on, and he's ready to go. So he's more like a microwave. Doesn't quite need as much foreplay as a general rule. So that's how we're different. All right. So in terms of the next slide, okay, this is bridging the gap, right? Because we need to bridge the gap. The last one was how are we different? Now we're bridging the gap. So how do we do that? This is what I have found. I have found that how we bridge the gap of our differences is we need to be willing to develop our weakest link. So what's my weakest link? I need to ask that question of myself. What is my weakest link? For men, typically, it's developing their feeling skills, like I talked about. So there has to be, first of all, an acceptance that they have to develop that weakest link. We tend to think if we could just give from our strengths, it's good. But the truth of the matter is we need to learn how to give from our weaknesses. Not stop giving from our strengths, but it's as if the universe has played a funny trick on us. That typically the thing that we need to do to really give us what we want, especially in our relationships, I would think, is to do the things that's hardest for us to do. I'm just the messenger here, guys, and I have found that to be the case time and time again. So if you ask yourself, what is the thing that's hardest for me to do? Or you could ask it, what is the thing that my partner wants that's hard for me to do? Accept that. Accept that that's true, and accept that you may need to work on that. Obviously, it's got to be reasonable, but much of the time it is reasonable. Men needing to develop their feeling skills is reasonable. It's just not easy. Women need to see the man as an act in progress as he works on his feeling skills. And that's really important, too, because what's important as you develop this communication, which we'll talk more about, is he's not going to do it great. Now, the truth is she's not, too. The vice versa for men. Women, they're not going to be that great at it either. We're never good at something that we haven't experienced. We haven't seen it, smelt it, heard it, tasted it, felt it from our parents and grandparents. So why would we be good at this? So let's kind of, we have to dance in the dark a little bit. We need to, be awkward and not be so great at it, but just stay with it. And if you see your partner doing the same old thing, rather than saying, oh, there it is, same old thing, I'm giving up, because as you develop these new communication skills, you need to stay with it and say, oh, okay, this is what we need to do. Help each other. You help each other. So, like I already mentioned, I'm ahead of myself. The couple needs to understand that the communication they need to do is something they probably have never seen, heard, or even felt before. So now, here's where we need to actually work on the communication. And this is a lot of what I do with couples in my office or on Skype. It's harder to do on the phone, but when I want to be able to see the couple when I'm doing this part of the therapy. They need to learn how to play catch. Now, playing catch is a metaphor for couples learning how to express and listen to each other's feelings and desires. And what I mean is if you play catch, one person throws the ball, the other person catches the ball, it's satisfying. The person throwing the ball sees the other person catching the ball, it's satisfying. If I throw the ball, and you don't catch it, or you just watch it drop on the ground, it's not very satisfying. So then what we want to do is say, well, how can I make it so we could do this successfully? Well, for one thing is, this isn't in the slide, but I want to go into some detail with this. The person who's throwing the ball, so to speak, okay, if I throw the ball really hard, he's not going to catch it. He's going to just protect himself from the hard throw. So the metaphor is this. So if I express my wants and my feelings to you, it's as if I'm throwing a ball to you. And as I express my wants and feelings to you, I want you to receive them. I want you to catch it. Now, deflecting a ball would be analogous to defending myself. So if I express myself to you and you defend yourself rather than catch my ball, rather than say, okay, I'm taking in what you're saying, I hear what you're feeling. If you just defend yourself, or you say, well, why should you feel this way about me? I should feel that way about you. That's as if the guy throws the ball at you and you knock it right back to him. So what we want to do is develop our emotional muscle. And developing this skill leads to more confidence in the male and more trust in the female. So confidence in the male, because he starts to see that his female partner is giving him some positive feedback, whether it's her eyes change, she softens, she's willing to have him hold her hand. So this skill leads to more confidence. And it's very important for men to feel confident. Very important for men to feel they're confident and they can make a positive impact. And it also leads to more trust in the female. I like to talk about masculinity and femininity now, because I think we have these interesting ideas what masculinity means and what femininity means. But what I see is masculinity should be defined around the concept of femininity. And femininity, to me, is the feeling of opening. It's opening. Just like the female has a vagina and it opens and receives, the feminine is the part of anybody, whether it's a male or female, the feminine side of us, because men have feminine sides as well, is a part of us that could open, that could receive, that could let someone penetrate them on some level to make a positive impact on them. So that's the feminine. And when a woman trusts her husband, her male partner, when then she's free to open her heart to him, as well as other parts of the body. And this allows him to make a positive impact on her. That's the masculine. The masculine is the part of him that can make a positive impact, that can penetrate in some way, whether it's, you know, obviously sexually we penetrate, but metaphorically speaking as well, we penetrate by bringing out this feeling of the woman being cherished. Well, according to this definition, and because of everything I've said to you so far, the most masculine thing that I could do, absolutely hands down, is being a good listener to my female partner. And the female partner, the best thing she could do is to recognize every positive thing the husband or male partner does. He's not going to do it perfect. He's a work in progress. But if we could keep that in mind, because he needs to feel empowered that he's making a difference, it's going to lead him to do more of that thing that you need from him, which is to penetrate in positive ways, to bring out your trust, and then there's this spiral upward. So developing the skill leads to more confidence in the male and more trust in the female, and it kind of goes round and round, and there's a feedback loop between the two. Now, it does take developing emotional muscle. What do I mean by that? Well, basically, with our partner, we could either be reactive or creative. And most of us are reactive because our parents were reactive. If my father said something to my mother that that made her feel a little uncomfortable, she probably just would immediately reduce her tension, not sit and listen to what he had to say, or vice versa. Okay, so if she said something to him, he would probably just right away do something that's very tension reductive, rather than breathe, stay with it, maybe even ask for more. I'll talk about that in a little bit. So we need muscle so that when we feel the tension, if my partner, because we have to learn how to deal with pain, we have to learn how to deal with pain, because we all have pain. We're all disappointed with each other at times. We all have hurt. We've had, maybe some of us have gone through crises in our relationships. We all have pain from the past. We have to find a way to bridge this gap, to connect. Because like I said, there's this link between great communication and great sex. One, sex, romance, passion. We need to be able to first connect in the pain. It's crucial. So when my partner says something that's painful to me, my first impulse is to do something that reduces my tension immediately. That's going to be a fight or flight reaction. That's going to be something like yelling back at her or just withdrawing in some way, right? There's the fight and there's the flight. So it takes some emotional muscle to feel that tension. My wife says to me, I'm really angry at you. I have an immediate visceral reaction to that statement, and I want to get rid of it quickly. But instead, I choose not to. I stay with my feeling, I feel my feeling, and then I say, tell me more about what you're feeling. Because she's the one that's throwing the ball right now. It's my job to have the glove on, the baseball glove on, and catch it. And catching it, unlike throwing a ball where it's just one simple throw, sometimes catching it means you got to go back and forth with talking a few times until she really feels like you caught my ball. It doesn't happen right away sometimes. I'm really angry at you. She says, I'm really angry at you. I stay with it. I feel my desire to run away or to yell back or to defend myself. I hang with it. I take a breath. I take two breaths, whatever I need to do. And I say to her, tell me more. Tell me more about that. Remember those three words, tell me more. That's what I need to say. So I'm developing muscle. Now, that is the same as if I go to the gym. I have muscle already, just like you have emotional muscle already. I have physical muscles, but if I go to the gym and I try to work with weights that are a little beyond my comfort zone, my muscle grows. If I stay within my comfort zone, it's not. I have to go a little beyond it and develop that physical muscle. Well, you have a built-in gym right there, emotional gym. It's called marriage. You know, it's just called marriage. And so with marriage, you have all the dumbbells, barbells, whatever you want to call it. You have the machines and everything right there because your partner's going to push your buttons. That's just how it is. They're going to say something that's going to create some tension in you, and you have to develop that emotional muscle to receive her. It also takes some emotional muscle to express oneself, and that has to do with the concept of clean communication. Now, what I mean by clean communication is when the only purpose, the sole purpose of me communicating to you is to inform you what's going on with me. And I could tell you this, that most of the time when we are, quote-unquote, communicating emotional situations or emotional experiences, we are not communicating cleanly. We have other goals in mind, not just to inform. Our goal might be to convince the other person they're wrong, or to punish that person, or to defend ourselves, or to reduce our tension. That's a big one. So, for example, the goal of venting is to reduce my tension. It's not to make a connection with my partner. It's to reduce my tension. It's very different because the goal is not to inform. So we have to inform our partner. And that takes some emotional muscle, too, because if I am agitated in some way and I need to communicate to my partner in a way that makes it easier for my partner to listen, I need to feel my feeling a little bit. I can't just dump it on her. I can't just reduce my tension on her. Now, I call venting like, pardon my graphic pun, but I call venting like throwing up. You know, you throw up on the other person and you feel better because you didn't feel too good before you threw up. You feel better, but then she's removing the chunks. It's not really beneficial. I mean, if you want to get in the car while you're by yourself and yell and scream and get out of your system, that's fine. that actually isn't that useful either. But definitely with another person, you have to keep in mind the purpose of clean communication, which is to inform. So you have to be willing to develop that emotional muscle. Now, I just want to say at this point, I will be doing a couples workshop. And as of an hour and a half ago, I got the venue. I'm pretty sure it's almost set in stone, I should say, that it'll be May 21st, Saturday, May 21st, in a place there called the South Coast Winery Restaurant. And it is by South Coast Plaza. It's Costa Mesa, right that area, Santa Monica, right in that, not Santa Monica, Costa Mesa, Santa Ana area, right by South Coast Plaza. I think it's Costa Mesa. And it's going to be a wonderful venue. And I will be, my key goal for the
The moderator has left the conference.
Well, guys, my phone just blanked out, so I don't know if it's the rain here or it was the just the system itself. That was kind of weird. It just I heard a click and then a dial tone. So I'm back on it, and don't leave me here. I'm here. So, okay, so where I was saying was learning to play catch, rules of the game. So you want to sit across from each other with no distractions in the external environment. What I was saying is you could do this, you could practice this, and, oh, I was talking about the experiment. Experimenting is one of my favorite words when it comes to couples. We need to experiment. We need to leave our little comfort zones, be willing to do these things that maybe we're awkward and we're not very good at, but to actually go for it, and to take some chances, to be courageous. So, okay, so what I want you to do is sit across from each other, no distractions in the external environment. No TV, no computer, no kids, you know, just create some space around where you can do this. And like I said before, with clean communication, the expressor's sole purpose is to inform his or her partner of what he or she is experiencing. That's the expressor's sole purpose. And now it is only the expressor's turn to talk about himself or herself. Okay. The partner's turn, the partner's turn comes only after he feels totally heard and listened to. So, and the purpose of the listener is twofold, to listen and to look for agreement. Okay, so what am I mean by that? What I'm saying is that there really is, the listener's job is to let the expressor feel that they've been heard. And the listener needs to look for agreement, meaning that there's going to be things that the listener says. I could tell you this right now, 99 times out of 100, when the listener, when the expressor is speaking emotional material, you, the listener, will not agree with 100% of what the expressor is saying, 99 times out of 100, because your partner is seeing things through her pain, through her emotion, and there is probably, and for her, she's 100% true. For you, it's not. And so what the trap we get into is we kind of go after the truth. We want to correct, especially us men. You know, we want precision. But women do this too. I mean, they want precision too. They want things to be right. They want to be represented the way they think they should be. So we're both guilty of that. Give up this idea of going after the truth. The truth, you can discover the truth later, or maybe not, because the goal here is to connect, not to find the truth. And for sure, you don't want to insist on the truth when the other person is at the heat of their emotion. It just doesn't work. Try to convince a person who's emotional that they're wrong. They're not ready to do it, even if they may do it one day, but they ain't doing it then. They're not doing it when they're in the heat of their emotion. So the listener needs to actually look for agreement. So the example I use a lot of times with my clients is, let's say my wife says to me, "You never listen to me." Now, I'm not a proponent of the word never or all or, you know, always, you know, any of those kind of extreme words, because they can be provocative and inflammatory. But if she says, "You never listen to me," I'm the listener now. It's her turn. It's her turn. And it's her turn until she feels totally heard and listened to, it's her turn. And so my job is to look for agreement and to listen. So I go, "Wow, so you're really feeling upset or angry with me, huh, that I didn't listen?" "Yes, you never listen." "Yeah, there are many times I haven't listened. This is not the first time I haven't listened to you." Now, I can agree with that. I can agree with that. So I'm looking for agreement. Now, I'm not going to say, "You're right, I never listened to you," because I do listen. I wouldn't say something that I couldn't agree with myself. I mean, I'm not going to be making things up. But I got to look for agreement. And I have found that with a couple, when they start to do that, it works. Look for agreement and listen. Be willing to be the listener for up to 4 minutes. Now, if you're doing a good job of listening, it doesn't last 4 minutes. Because well before 4 minutes, the expressor feels hurt. I've had a lot of people complain to me. They go, "Wow, these conversations with my partner go on and on." It's usually the husband that's complaining about it. These conversations go on and on and on and never stops, you know. And usually I say, "Oh, that's probably because your listening is terrible. You're not doing your job right." And, of course, they don't like when I say that because I'm saying you're responsible. But that is the truth. And every time they try to listen better, whenever they're practicing what I say, which is to do some of the things I'm saying, develop their emotional muscles, be willing to tune in, be willing to not go with their first fight or flight reaction, look for agreement, all that stuff, suddenly the conversation ends much quicker than ever before. Why? Because she feels heard. So it's very important to be willing to develop that muscle. That's the key, be willing to. You have to give up the idea that relationships are always going to be easy and effortless. They're not. It takes work. Just like being healthy, you know, as we get older especially, if we don't work out, our body is not going to be in good shape. Our bodies need for us to work it. Our relationships need for us to work it as well. No difference. The listener needs to think of himself as a good journalist. A good journalist finds out as much information as he can and checks to make sure that he's got the story correct. If he has the story right, she will let him know. If not, she needs to express again, you know, maybe in a slightly different way. So this is what happens when I've been in newspapers before, and sometimes journalists, if it's a good journalist, will check it out, and sometimes the story's not right. And I'm glad they asked me, And I say, no, it's not quite this, it's this. And then they might say, oh, so you're saying this. And I go, yes, that's exactly right. And typically that's good. And then if I ever do read the story in the paper the next day, it's what I said. So it's a good metaphor as well, another metaphor. The listener has to think of himself as a good journalist. And when she feels totally heard, then it's his turn to express. Okay, now what does it take for real success? To develop this emotional connection, which ultimately leads to more romance, more passion, more sexuality. I would aim for 10 minutes a day for emotional conversations to develop the emotional connection. 10 minutes a day. Now, why do I say 10 minutes a day? Well, because a lot of people, men especially, when they're given this blanket thing, like you have to talk to your partner every single day, it's very overwhelming. The feeling is like it's never going to stop. So I like to give people this 10-minute bracket. And actually, if you do just the 10 minutes a day, it'll work. I've had clients that just did 10 minutes every day. And I mean every day. You know, and what I mean by the 10 minutes a day for conversation, I mean, again, this is not when you're sitting down talking about when to visit your mother or how to get transportation worked out for your kids, dance lessons. That's good to do, but that's not the 10 minutes that I'm talking about. This 10 minutes is about intimacy, emotional intimacy. This is what I mean by that is this 10 minutes is about I want to know what's going on in you, in your feelings, in your body. And the man needs to share that as well. I want to go into that for a few minutes, actually, this whole thing about being, I mean, what I just said. I said being in the body. When I wrote my book and the editor saw that I wrote Being in the Body, the editor says, you mean as opposed to astral projection? I mean, what do you mean? And I have a tendency to use words sometimes, and I want to make sure that it's clear. Because for some people, they know exactly what I mean by being in their body. But for some other people, that may seem like Greek. When I talk, especially for men, when we're in our heads, we're literally in our heads. I mean, our energy, our attention is in our thoughts and in our heads. And to be in our bodies usually means paying attention to what is going on in my belly, my heart, maybe my throat. But I like to stick with the heart and the belly because a lot of our feelings are experienced there. You know, feelings of fear can be felt in the stomach in terms of a tight stomach, a hard stomach, or a closed chest in the chest, or guilt is felt in the chest. Sadness can be felt in the stomach. It can also be felt as a throat, lump in the throat. But our feelings are felt in the body, and we need to actually pay attention to those feelings, to what is going on. We have to pay attention to that part of the body is what I mean to say. To pay attention to that part of our body. I've told people how useful it is to pay attention. I tell a story of one day I was driving to a family reunion, and my wife looks at me and says, you know, Todd, you look terrible. What's going on? And I go, well, thanks for the compliment. I look in the rearview mirror because we're driving out to the valley, and I go, I don't look good. I don't feel good either, but I don't think I'm sick. She goes, well, what is this? I don't know. Anyway, we get to the destination, and I'm sitting there with the family, and my wife says, you still don't look good. I said, well, yeah, thanks. Okay, great. I don't look good. So I leave the table. I go privately into my niece's room. I sit there, and I call this now consulting my belly. So I said, okay, belly, what are you feeling? What's going on in your belly? Now, I had no idea what was going on in my belly because most of us live our lives, like as I was, in our eyeballs, just kind of reacting to people and situations and not looking at what's going on in our belly. There's a whole inner reality going on in our bodies that we should check into. So I tune into my belly. I go, what's going on? And I noticed there was some sadness in the belly, and I didn't know why. And my eyes welled up a little bit. Didn't cry, but it welled up. Didn't know why, but suddenly all my sinuses like cleared up. It was as if everything there, actually I'm saying as if, but I believe it was, suppressed sadness. We suppress our feelings so much and we're so unconscious about it that the only way out of it, the quickest way out of it, is to literally pay attention to what's going on in our bellies. What does my belly feel like? What is my heart? What feelings are going on in my belly or my heart? So anyway, I was up there a total of 3 minutes, tops. I come downstairs My wife looks at me, she goes, wow, you look great. What the heck did you do? I mean, even drugs don't work that fast. And I said, I consulted my belly, and she looks at me like I'm crazy, and later on I explained it to her. And then it was only after that that I started kind of getting in touch with what that feeling, those feelings were all about. It wasn't even necessary, though, to feel better. It wasn't necessary to understand why I was feeling it to feel better. It was just a matter of paying attention. So during these 10-minute-a-day conversations, this is what I'd want you to do. What's going on in my belly? What's going? When I look at you in the eyes, what am I really feeling? Now, that's more challenging than it seems because we work very hard to create an image oftentimes that goes, it's really contrasted with what is it that I'm really feeling. So that kind of image making, trying to be look in control, is why we stay in our eyeballs and our heads so much. But when we look a little deeper, we go, wow, there's some stuff going on down there, feelings of sadness, fear. You know, one of the best things that happens sometimes with couples when they look at each other in the eyes is when a husband or a wife says to the other, I look at you and I'm feeling really scared or nervous. Because that's typically what happens when you're not used to being connecting, even with eye contact. And that's what I mean. You want to develop that. You want to look at each other in the eyes. Feelings of fear come up, or anxiety and nervousness, uncomfortableness. Fears you're going to see me and not like me. There's all kinds of stuff that comes up. We could be married for 30 years, and you know, we've created a marriage that's kept us in our comfort zone, so we don't really feel those feelings. But once we get out of that comfort zone, once we take the 10-minute time to look at each other in the eyes and to make that connection, then our feelings can come up, our fear comes up. So share it. Sharing it is one way of getting it out of the way. Because every time you share a feeling with your partner, you're opening up to courage, you're connecting, and you're developing emotional muscle. And it paves the way for more connection and more closeness. So this could be a never-ending, wonderful, continual development of your deepening and closer and more joyful relationship. This is all good stuff. Now, don't expect to get it right. Developing this emotional muscle takes time. So when you sit down, there'll be reactions. There'll be lots of stops and starts and miscues. Stay with it and give each other the chance to do this. You want to unite. Unite each other's enemy, see? Unite each other's enemy. Sometimes you may experience it that way, but that's a falsehood. That's a story you've told yourself that's wrong. I would suggest that you unite against the common enemy of the status quo. The status quo is all the stuff you've done to keep yourself comfortable, to, you know, your lack of clean communication, you're trying to protect yourself, your reactivity, your immediate tension reduction behavior. That's the status quo. Developing this emotional muscle to feel your feelings and still look at each other in the eyes and stay connected and express yourself so your partner could better listen, and to listen so your partner wants to talk more to you. That is what you want to do. And so you literally unite against the common enemy of the status quo. That is your only enemy. And I only see it as the enemy because it's a strong term, because it limits you. And we want you to be the unlimited people you really are. And like I said, your intimate relationship is a great gym. It's going to teach you about the muscles that you really never knew you could develop and have. Next slide, the mind-body connection. Okay, sex. Sex is about desire. Desire is felt in the body. So is pain. As you learn to deal with pain more maturely, which is what I've been talking about with you, the body can now open up and relaxes, and each of you are freer to be yourselves. That's why I think it's kind of a joke to think that marriage ends freedom. Marriage can begin freedom. If you use it and use the marriage gym the way it really can be used, when you're not in a committed relationship and you're dating or you're out there, you're not really in having the opportunity to develop the person you really are, to learn to accept your flaws, accept somebody else's flaws, to learn to love each other with those flaws. You're not free yet to do that. There's a certain freedom to be yourself, to be more and more who you are. So as you learn to deal with this pain more maturely, your body will open up. And you relax because you learn to experience that trust and you develop that confidence. Now, we know, because there's a mind-body connection, you know, these days, we've learned so much in the last, I would say, 25 years about hormones and what a big part it plays in so many things, so many bodily functions, but definitely in desire and definitely in intimacy and sexuality. And I just want to point out that even though this is not totally as simplistic as I'm about to tell you, and I know it's just theory that needs to be tested more, that what I've learned is that for the female, the hormone oxytocin is very important, and that when she has high levels of oxytocin, she is going to feel happier. She'll probably feel more sexual, more orgasmic, possibly. And the question then is, how do you raise oxytocin in the woman? Well, studies seem to be showing that there's two things. One is planned romance, which I didn't get into that in this particular talk, this seminar, but planned romance seems to, you know, a feeling of being cherished, though. Okay, that's one way for her to feel cherished, is planning some romantic thing. And also sharing feelings, connecting at an emotional level. That seems to raise the oxytocin in the female. That's why the women who may be sharing with their female friends, there's a good support network and social network, will maybe in a lot better shape to receive the man than a woman who's just been with kids all day, hasn't had a chance to share feelings, and there's a kind of a female hormonal crisis going on in this country today, because back when there was more free time for women, they were able to share in that way. And these days, many of them are working, or they're driving and being a chauffeur and driving the kids every single which place, and so they don't get that oxytocin high or that increase. For men, we need testosterone, elevated testosterone, to experience a sense of wellness. Now, women need testosterone too. They just don't need the amount of levels that men need. But it seems to be that when men have a decent level of testosterone going in their system, then it really helps them. And one of the things that seems to raise the testosterone in men is to feel like they're making a positive impact, that things are happening. So if the man is successful and he goes out and he makes a lot of money, that's going to raise his testosterone. If he does something that truly pleases his female partner, that will raise his testosterone. So how does playing catch effectively raise oxytocin in the female and testosterone in the male? Well, actually, many ways. One is that the actual communicating, playing catch, as I've been talking about itself, will open up the woman and bring out trust, and so it raises her oxytocin. And the man starts to feel the sense of confidence when he sees the warmth and the approval and the acceptance from the woman, because she's feeling cherished. So that obviously is a direct link between playing catch and raising oxytocin and testosterone. But of course it goes beyond that, because then what happens is it continues and extrapolates into other parts of your life, other parts of your relationship and your life. In your relationship, it'll help you in the bedroom. And oftentimes the man is going to feel more potent, and it extends to the bedroom, and then he feels even more testosterone there. And the woman in the bedroom, you know, she has now felt open and trusting because her husband has accepted who she is and what she feels. So in the bedroom, she's also open to him penetrating her and enjoying her, not just with the penis, even though that definitely is one way to do it, but just physically, affectionately, allowing her to be touched by their hands, by, you know, the different body parts, and allowing herself to feel good about her partner. It actually also extends to outside the relationship. I have found that when couples are playing catch, which is such a pivotal part, such a building block to having this passionate, joyful, alive relationship, that it's only common sense that they'll go out in the workforce, they'll go out in their networking, they'll go out in their businesses and just be a little bit more on fire. And so it can actually be good for your pocketbook or your wallet. All right. So just to summarize here, the link between healthy conversations and fulfilling sex. Well, one, there's opening versus the prior closing. The status quo is about closing off, especially when things get tough. Okay? If you stay open when things get tough and connect with each other, of course it'll be easy to get open during sexual activity as well. There's a hormone connection I mentioned. And I mentioned oxytocin and testosterone. I am absolutely sure that affects so many of things. As a matter of fact, cortisol, which is the stress hormone, if that's too high, it shuts down sexuality. And one thing that alleviates stress is having a healthy emotional connection. So it's not just those two hormones. It's all the, estrogen in the women and progesterone and testosterone and cortisol and others that I'm not even aware of, I'm sure. They all come and play together. It all works together. And having healthy conversations, playing catch, positively affects all those hormones. And remember, women need to feel cherished. And you do that, one of the quickest ways to do that is by the man deciding to practice from his weakest link, which is learning to develop the emotional skill and feeling skills and to learn how to connect and play catch. The man, feeling his positive impact. So the woman needs to recognize the gains he's made and to compliment. And it's fine to give negative feedback, but please give positive feedback. Negative feedback is a lot more easily digest when there's also positive feedback. I just want to say it a little different way, too. We're not selective stuffers, which means that if we're stuffing a hurt, our anger, our pain, and we're distant from each other, we're going to, let's say I'm stuffing 99% of my pain. I'm going to stuff 99% of my desire at one point, especially if I'm a female. Men sometimes could compartmentalize a little better, not always. So the more that we're free to open and unsuppress these feelings, the more we're open to all the positive as well. And lastly, be courageous. Be courageous to get really close to your partner, both conversationally and physically. It's not so easy. It seems like it should be. You would think of something like mountain climbing or skydiving. Well, that takes some risk. Believe me, looking at your partner in the eyes and listening to your partner share feelings that push your buttons and staying open and not closing down your heart or tightening your belly and staying with it, that takes courage. It's the courage because these emotional reactions trigger old behaviors, old wounds, old issues. I'm not getting into all that, of course, today. But definitely be willing to be courageous, be willing to experiment, be willing to leave your comfort zone. And I want to repeat again that if you really want to have an experience and you're going to be in the Southern California area the weekend of May 21st, that will become a wonderful laboratory right there with me by your side. And I do it in a way that is very it's pleasant and challenging at the same time, and your privacy is respected. You'll be able to share as little or as much as you want with the other people there. And it promised to be a great event. So if you're interested, call me or email me. My email is todd@toddkrieger.com. That's todd@toddkrieger.com. My phone number is 714-848-2288. Also, my book, The Long Hot Marriage, it's a wonderful book. It brings out some of these concepts and then a lot more and then has exercises in it as well. Go to my website, which is toddkrieger.com. Spelled the same way, and you'll be able to easily find a way to buy the book. So I enjoy talking with you today, and I'd love to hear any feedback from all you listeners, whether you're listening to it live or on the replay. And there'll be more of these seminars, so look out for them, and I enjoy doing them, and I wish you well. Take care.
The moderator has left the conference.